Ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else who does not feel classified within the binary system, welcome to Talking Science, the most sciencey show on Campus Radio Linz, where science is as much as an issue as its philosophy and history. I'm Boyang. Today I have the utmost pleasure to introduce my co-host Dian, one of the two most scientifically interested people currently on Campus Radio, on campus.
Yeah, good evening, JKU. My name is Dian, and today I'll be talking with my good friend Boyang about scientific, let's call it history of how it developed from mythical context. How did pre-scientific mythology developed into scientifics, and how does it affect the science today and the way it is seen by people. Also, we would like to talk about how scientific people could affect non-scientific people, and
I think my headset doesn't work. Does yours work? Can you listen? Okay, mine's don't work, so doesn't really matter. So one of the interesting things is that we are living in the 21st century, about 2,500 years after the first philosophers of nature or natural philosophers have established some theories about how the world works. And still, 2,500 years later, we still have people who believe in things like homeopathy, horoscopes, or evolution. And we wonder, how did it come so far that in the ages of Wikipedia we have not established some form of established, you know, view of the world that is, I mean, that is plausible and reasonable?
Yeah, this is a good question. When we started about 2,000 years ago, I mean, it was completely reasonable to believe in a religion, because there was absolutely no way of testing a scientific approach at all. So people who have a desire to know where they come from, to know where they are and where they are going, they have an ultimate desire for certainty. So a philosophy of dogmatism, so where somebody states of how the world developed and how it is and how it's going to be, is pretty much dogmatic. And even though some of the philosophers in the early age were rather pretty much close, and in this matter I'm talking about this atomism, where Greeks developed the idea of something that is not dividable into any other parts. Today we call them, we used to call them atoms, but now they are more elementary particles which are not dividable into anything else. But even at that time, I think it was still mysticism and philosophy, even though they were right, simply because of the reason they just weren't able to test what they were saying. And some people, practically most of the people at that time, people as well today, which have the desire to have some guide star in their lives, to have something they can relate to, and who need this dogmatism. These people from these early ages, they developed all through this up until today. The desire to have something fixed in your life is still there.
But would you first excuse for the noise you might have heard through the microphones. I was closing the window, and as you know, we are a very low-tech radio station, and so we still have windows that separate our noise from those of others. And ooh, of course,
okay, thank you.
You only want to hear those high-quality noise that we generate. So back to what you said. So yes, those people, those atomists, they might be right, or they might sound, or their theories might sound right in our current scientific paradigm, in our current philosophy, because we find some words or we find some concepts that are similar. But would you call that science? Because that is just natural philosophy. They try to derive those theories from some basic thoughts or from some basic views about the world that are not testable, that are in no way scientifically falsifiable or verifiable. So
yeah, simply because it's not testable, even at that time, even though they were right, it was simply not science because they still had to believe in it, and there was absolutely no point or no possibility to test it against anything.
So it was faith.
Definitely, definitely.
Then when did science start, in your opinion?
Well, I mean, you can see, I mean, the progression of scientific theories, hypotheses, is very closely linked to the technical revolution in which you're able to measure something. You can usually you start with an hypothesis or theory. You have an idea. Mm-hmm. You start out on the chalkboard. You express it. You differentiate everything. And
you're talking about mathematics?
Yeah, or physics. I mean, Einstein needs more than 10 years to get the math for his theories done. But the point is, you need to be something to be scientific, and the grade of the of a scientific theory is measured by how well you can observe its predictions. So even, let's say, even if Einstein was right, and when his theory or the way he expressed it wouldn't make it possible to test it because it wouldn't make predictions, it simply wouldn't be scientific.
You know, like the string theories nowadays, because apparently I am not a physicist, but there are many people who have problems with string theories and calling it unscientific because they are, or at our current level of technology, we cannot test it.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, does it make it unscientific if you cannot test it?
Yes, definitely. I think so. But to come back to the evolution from a philosophical community to Copernican. Also, we used to live, also at least 1,000-2,000 years ago, in a viewpoint where where mankind was simply at the center of the whole universe. Then came Copernicus, then came Galileo Galilei. The people, also the human, moved from the center of the universe always a little bit further away, almost into nothingness. And when you have on one side the scientific people who were whose job it is to come up with these ideas, to test it, to falsify it, to come up with new ideas, and etc., then you have on the other side also the non-scientific people, which still need, as I said prior, the certainty of something fixed. And this is, in my opinion, this dogmatic paradigm we have about these two sides of society, because the advancement of our society is closely linked to the advancement of science itself.
Yes. Well, the material advancement, if you may say that, we have more technology, we have more light bulbs, etc., etc.
Or at least more possibilities.
In some form, certainly. The point is, I mean, there are still scientists who believe in forms of dogma. I mean, funny thing is that one of the most important theories in biology is called the central dogma of genetics, that the translation of protein comes from DNAs. Of course, that is just a word those Watson and Crick used because they were not very informed in Catholic theology. And they use a word that they did not really properly understand. But still, of course, you try to establish some kind of divide between people of science, or as they used to call it in the 19th century, men of science, because women, hey, nowadays we call them scientists, which is more gender neutral, and those people who are not scientists. And you make a divide between those who believe in dogma, things that you cannot test, and things you can.
Yeah, dogma is mainly about, it's in the end, it's a circular reasoning. It's not even made to test. It's because people just want it to have fixed in order to not question it, because they need to know the best dogmatic system mm-hmm. for people to believe in would be mm-hmm. one which would even be not testable at all. It doesn't need to be testable, because the only purpose of this dogmatic view mm-hmm. is to explain where did I come from, mm-hmm. where am I, and where am I going. And this is how I mean, even the scientific method on the one hand and religion on the other developed from in the end from the same philosophical concepts, even also from philosophy itself. I mean, science and religion stand on the shoulders of philosophy. Some were dogmatic. They set a certain outcome, mm-hmm. and this outcome had to fit the things I see. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you have on the other way around, you have a completely non-dogmatic view where the stuff you believe right now or believe or whatever is strongly related to what you can actually measure and what not.
So, in your opinion, the difference between science and non-science, or the difference between science and the religion, if I may say so, is that scientists are always ready to question their own dogmata.
Yes.
Okay.
And if they don't, then, I mean, we have seen in the past, even in the scientific community, that there were always some kind of dogmas around where a huge group of scientists believed in it, and I use the word believe in on purpose. And when some scientist came around and he had a completely different idea and a different approach, where he questioned this scientific dogma, if you want, and he was like completely put in the corner. But nevertheless, today we know he was right. I mean, one example would be, for example, Ludwig Boltzmann, mm-hmm. because at the time he was the only one who actually believed that atoms existed. The dogma was completely the other way around, and he simply was put in the corner. But nevertheless, he was right. So this dogmatic, the belief in a dogma, is maybe something that it's completely human, whether you're a scientist or not.
Okay.
Or something that happens when a lot of people come together who have the same opinion. They might think that what they think is the ultimate knowledge, and there sure. nothing comes
afterwards. But is it afterwards. Bad? I mean, what's the problem with people believing a dogmata?
Well, I mean,
as you said, scientists do that as well. So in the end, we all have some kind of beliefs that we have not tested, maybe in the end, in our subconsciousness.
But there's a difference between believing in a dogma mm-hmm. and stating that this dogma might not be touched or shouldn't be touched, because of course I could also believe in a scientific dogma, mm-hmm. but when I'm still open for something that questions my dogma, there's no problem, because it's still some kind of scientific. But if you have a strong community, let's say a strong scientific community, and they say this is the dogma, we have explored everything that there could be explored, and anybody else is like cornered, then it automatically eliminates the options that I'm wrong. So this is like saying I'm ultimately right and everybody else is wrong.
And is it that bad? Okay, well, that is a rhetorical question. I mean, we are made to believe, or in at least when we go to college or to universities, I hope that is one of the third thing we learn, is that we are possibly wrong, and that is what makes science or makes learning the exciting issue.
Yeah, but there's a difference between wrong and not right. We know that we cannot say that we are right.
Mm-hmm.
So not being right doesn't mean automatically that I'm wrong.
So, or not having the certainty of being right does not necessarily mean that we're wrong, of course. But how would you, Dean, how would you see that? What I mean is, how does that affect, or this form of scientific worldview, or this kind of testability or falsifiability of theories, how does that affect people in their normal lives or in society?
Yeah, the point is, I mean, we in the end, we're all in the same boat. So, and whether some science is being funded or not is a hugely political decision, and it should be, because it affects everybody, of course. I mean, there would be no point in saying, okay, we're something special, we do our own stuff, and you do your own stuff. We're all living in the same boat, and it's completely, totally important to make these decisions together. But in order to make them, science has to have a certain form of credibility. And one problem with the credibility is that the way, for example, media portrays science is in a way is extremely inaccurate, and this inaccuracy completely goes against the credibility. For example, just one example, when a paper, for example, states B causes A under C given D and with E conditions, then it's a very specific kind of problem, and it defines a pretty specific kind of environment. But nevertheless, it's very likely that the media would just state that B causes A, even though you could also have in another study the complete opposite conclusion with other input, as with other environmental settings.
Well, obviously, journalists and scientists, they do have different agendas. A scientist wants to be published, and we hope that a good peer review requires that people or that scientists are accurate with their descriptions and with their paper, whereas a journalist just wants to get his paper published.
Of course, so. But the problem is still that we're still living, as well, that we're still in the same boat, mm-hmm. and we need to get it going mm-hmm. somehow. I mean,
the point is, of course, it would be better if a journalist reports correctly, but the point is, people have a very short attention span. There's a reason why they are interested in catchy phrases as titles. So if a journalist does not report, as it does, catchy and sometimes lacking details, maybe the article doesn't get read at all. So what you have maybe is just the decision or the option between having science reporting that may not be very accurate, or no science reporting at all, or science reporting that get ignored completely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
what this implies is that we could only, even though we could go scientifically further, mm-hmm. we wouldn't be able to go further because of the reason that people don't understand, or these problems, or this scientific output, that there would be no lobby behind funding the research itself.
I don't know, but I'm not a politician, so I have no idea how politicians make their decisions. But I do hope that politicians see some value in science. And I think people see values in things if they read that in papers, even if the concrete content may not be accurate.
Yes, but it's the politicians of today's are coming from the people from let's say, as they grew up 20, 30, 40 years ago. Mm-hmm. So the politicians from tomorrow will be the people of today who read papers, who read about science. And if science manages to have a very bad credibility, then the scientists of tomorrow wouldn't give credit that's necessary for science to.
But what do you mean stuff. With a bad credibility? So for example, in the example of
For example, in the food industry or whatever, or with nutrition. Mm-hmm. I mean, some people usually say that okay, they say this one is bad for you, but it doesn't matter because half a year later they will come up with another study which says the exact opposite.
But I mean, is that bad? Because I mean, science, I mean, there is, as we said, there is no established dogmata in science.
The reason why it's bad is because it's a study, it doesn't mean it's been done very well. It also could have been it could have also been a study from finance from a company which has an interest that this product is kind of a positive one.
Yeah, sure, but I mean, there's no certainty in science, so we can never say that any theory or that any paper published has the truth. But nevertheless, if we have contradiction papers, I mean, what is the other option, that we don't publish, or that we don't, I mean, that we don't report on that?
Yeah, that you filter out, to start with filtering out those studies who are financed by companies who have an interest that the stuff that's being studied about has a positive output, because this is also being reported a lot.
So you think that a journalist have an obligation when they report on science, that they also report on the fundings?
Yeah, I think a study shouldn't be called a study when it's done, when it's financed by a company with a monetary
incentive
stuff behind it.
Okay, but most of science nowadays is unfortunately or fortunately, depending how you define that, done with in German Drittmittel or external financing by the industry or otherwise.
Yes, but it's a huge problem. I mean, this Anton Zeilinger had a very nice quote about it. When we just had Drittmittel zur Verfügung, also when we just have Drittmittel available, then there wouldn't be, then we wouldn't have current today, only extremely efficient candles. Because at the time, there's also a nice anecdote from Faraday when he showed his experiments with magnets to his Secretary of Treasure. And the Secretary of Treasure asked him, why do we need your expensive experiments? And Faraday answered, well, so that you might tax it one day. And he was basically experimenting with current. So,
fair enough.
So we wouldn't be able to have this radio show without Faraday and the possibility of his stuff being taxed.
Yes, so.
I mean, so the problem is the really basic research is extremely expensive and you have absolutely no idea where it leads. And this is the reason why companies wouldn't do this. I mean, it makes sense. But a society should recognize that this basic research is extremely important, because otherwise we would still be living in caves.
Do you think we are underfunded in Austria currently?
Yeah, definitely. Especially for a first world country who is absolutely dependent on new technologies and new stuff. Because I will just say it as a fact. I mean, I won't give you the proof, because in my opinion, it's somehow self-explanatory. But every old technologies automatically wander off to cheaper countries.
Yes.
Because patents run out and everybody knows how to do them.
Well, even if patents don't run out, people just steal, or people use the technology, and some people call that stealing.
Yeah, because point is that the older the technology is, the more people learn it how to do it, and the cheaper it becomes. So as a developed country, and as a country which has a strong interest in maintaining a high amount of cash flow, you are extremely dependent on new technology coming out. And not just papers, but developments and developing new stuff is like mining gold, where every gold nugget is a discovery which you could use in a way to start new companies, to produce something and to sell it, which causes demand somewhere. And of course, the less people something have in offer, the higher the price, and then you can also maintain your status as a first world country.
But the point is that let's that first aside. Back to the discussion about the reputation of science, about credibility of science. Of course, the funding of scientific publications by corporations and financial industries is quite, it might be problematic, and it is quite a way of corporations, of industries to influence the scientific opinion or the established science, and in a way to influence public opinions in their favor. But it is very well possible that you have contradiction publications, ideas, theories that are not dependent or that are not financed by some industry, by some corporations, but that they are inherently just of different opinions, and they are maybe published at the same time. and they are on opposite conclusions. And that happens because simply it is, science is complicated. We can never be certain that any one theory is correct. It is very possible that two different theories occur at the same time. And then they get, of course, reported, or the, hopefully or not, depending on your position, may be reported on. And why should that hurt the credibility of science? Just because we do not communicate some form of a coherent opinion, because in the end, science is not coherent, because the world is not consistent or coherent. So why should we fear any form of public, any form of disillusion in the public, because just because we are complicated and sometimes not of a single opinion.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is a good point, but it's still all about the presence of science in the public, and the public, in my opinion, should be aware that these differences in science is not something that's unusual. It's practically the normal case.
Yes. So maybe that is not a problem with science itself, but with the science, how people understand it.
Because yes, exactly.
Isn't it so that nowadays people, I mean, what do people think of science? They think of dinosaurs, because that's something what paleontologists work with. They think of atoms, because that's something what physics work with. They think of molecules. They think of things that are sciencey because scientists work with them. They think of the contents of science, but they rarely associate science with scientific methods. And maybe that is a problem with our education, because we don't teach people to think critically, do we?
Absolutely not, at least not in my opinion. But I think science is vastly undervalued in the school for the effect that it has nowadays. I mean, you just need to take a look at the media or the last 10 years in computer science, what has been developed. I think the school system we have right now is in terrible need of being reformed in a way that people who get out of the school are able to understand the topics which are present today.
Is it that important? Isn't it more important that they simply learn the scientific method?
It is definitely important, because the gap between the scientific Fortschritt is...
Advancement?
Yeah.
Progress?
Between the scientific progress is increasing, in my opinion. It's getting more complicated. And this is also what we see in the scientific community, that we need more people who are cross-related to scientific fields. I mean, you are a bioinformatics, so you study bioinformatics, and 50 years ago it wasn't even there. So it gets more complicated, and to be able to understand what's going on, for even that the people have the possibility to choose, they need to understand how it works. And for being able to understand how it works, we absolutely need to reform the school system in a way that we ask ourselves what somebody needs to understand when he's out of school by, let's say, 18. And then moving back year for year and setting the ground for the next one.
Yeah, sure. I mean, of course, we can reform the appearances of schools. We can rename them from Hauptschule into a Neue Mittelschule. But I think it is extremely hard.
Yeah, but renaming a school name, I wouldn't call it a reform. It's just,
well, yes, we call that labeling. Reform in this country. The point is that to reform the content of what is taught and the way how it is taught, that has been the way for the last 150 years.
Exactly.
And I think it is harder to reform the school or the structure of and the content of teaching than to reform the political system in the country.
Yeah, but one leads to the other. It's